From eastward west to northward south comes in time in the cosmic salon. I'm niche, 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 and I'll be your companion as we slip into the liminal. Relax and sink in with an open mind and eye.
Hey everybody, welcome back. I'm Emily Moyer. Nish and Michael Walker are here, and it's just the three of us, man. How you guys doing?
Hell yeah, pretty good. Good to be here. Good to see you lovely ladies.
That's
hear
right.
Your voices at least.
Rock on. Here we are in July, and boy, we're burning up over here in the West.
we have looks like the next 10 days of rain here in Texas, which is like, this is about the second or third time we've had this since we've been here, right? And it's typical for Texas to have some. We have like the cool electrical storms here, but this has been a really unusual amount of like 10 or 12 days in a row, right? A couple of times with rain, or it'll just be gray all day and rain for a few minutes.
Bring that back here. That's my weather.
Yeah, that's what they did. They just swapped it out, dude, right? But then but when we come out of those, then it's, you know, 10 days of like 98 or 99 with humidity feels like 110, you know?
Oh, I don't want to hear that. I'm sitting here in 113 right now.
Dude, last
year.
And 36% humidity.
See this sheen on my forehead there?
Yeah.
I'm not on cam, but baby, I'm feeling
ridiculous.
The sheen too.
My God, it's hot.
We're moist.
Last summer.
Let's see, go ahead.
Last summer when we were still in Los Angeles, like towards the end of the summer, like it was either late August or sometime in September, we had a huge heat wave that went along with some quote fires unquote. It was over 120 degrees. Our electricity went out. So we had no electricity, 120 degrees, 19-year-old cat, and a freezer full of meat because I was on the carnivore diet.
Yeah, that's what's going on here. It was like the heat index on Saturday was 130 in Portland. And it's super rough. All of my animals were all suffering. A lot of people over here don't have air conditioners because it never gets to this. Yeah. 80s is actually kind of hot here.
Yeah, we ended up having to do was sleep outside in the backyard on that. The backyard has at least a stone patio. So the stones were like the coolest place you could get. So we figured out that it was cooler to lay out there on the stones. So Olivia was out there laying, touching as many parts of her body as she could, like we all were, to the stones. Right. Just to try and like
cool down. Yeah.
Right. So it was kind of a fun bonding experience, but it's just hot. And then like every place, you know, we would try and go out and get away from it for a bit, but that was during a period of time where they were only allowing outdoor dining anywhere. Right. So it's like, you can't even get away from the heat.
They've been telling us on Washington to prepare for the fire since December. I've been talking about it since December because they've sent out emails. I get the government, the local emails, the local and the state emails, government wise. And in December, they were saying extremely dry. We're expecting wildfires. You know, it stopped. It rained here until about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so we know they're going to plan fires and then this massive heat wave comes on. So Washington's going to burn.
Yeah. It's crazy. The thing with the fires, dude, like, you know, there obviously was a lot of fires the last couple of years in Southern California, but I figured out some pretty weird shit that whenever there was fires, like I would go to the area where they said there were fires and there were no fires.
But yes.
There would be fires in other parts of town that were not being reported, but like the areas that they were saying, oh my God, this is like, you know, blah, blah, blah. The freeway is closed from here to there. It wasn't true. So I don't know what game is afoot with that, right? But like, you know, there, I was literally driving over the 405 freeway over the hill from the valley into Santa Monica, listening to how that area was overwhelmed with smoke and the freeway was closed as I drove right by Getty Center where they said it was. And there was no fire and I was the only one on the freeway. So it's like,
of course. What's
happening? Right? But I wasn't blocked. There was no, I was like, okay. So I, you know, I don't know what game is afoot with that. There's some kind of game afoot. I don't know. Sonia had somebody on her show last year that had correlated some of these quote unquote fires as being related to black holes, right? As opposed to, like, it was sort of a different take on the directed energy weapon idea, right? It was, it involved some of the same factors, but it was a little bit different. And it was actually kind of interesting sounding. But I don't know if it's a technology, you know, to create these little mini black holes and then something like that, shoot something through that for the fire or whatever it is, or if the black hole is a result of a directed energy weapon or whatnot. I forget what her name is, but that was kind of an interesting idea.
I like that idea. And it kind of, it speaks to the whole situation today, consciousness, dimensions, and of the absolute. You know, black holes. Yeah. There's some connection there for me always with the absolute and black holes.
Yeah. So this is our third episode. And like, I don't know, the first time we did it, I didn't know that we were trying to make a series, but that seems like what's happening here because people really like it. And so do we.
Yeah. Yes.
So today, like I had sent you guys. So just after our last meeting, I went to Los Angeles. And I had a meeting with somebody who is a similar to, you know, like one of our type, one of our kind. And we had a very deep, very one of those super powerful, energetic conversations that like melts you down for about 3 days afterwards.
I love those.
Like my brain melted. I had a headache for 3 days. Like I just was like, what on earth? Right. But I had never heard of the Gateway document. And so I was explaining to him some of the experiences that I had that I talked about with you guys in the last two episodes, right? Regarding sort of this, like, you know, sort of time traveler, time span, temporal pincer sort of movement that I've been in or whatever. I was explaining some of the experiences to him and he says, well, have you seen the Gateway document? Like, no, I mean, the truth is that for the last several years, I haven't been doing really as much research or listening to podcasts or videos as I used to. I used to listen to shit 26 hours a day. And now I listen to maybe 26 minutes a day. Right. And at a certain point, like when I had sort of developed my own sort of like my own channel or my own style with how I deal with stuff, I stopped paying attention to too many other people's because I wanted to keep my stream clear. And I didn't, you know, I have a pretty active imagination and I'm pretty good at like manifesting something if I think about it a lot. Right. So sometimes that, you know, sort of leaves you open to being able to like confuse somebody else's reality for yours. Right. Or to hear about something and like manipulate the circumstances in your life around, right, to see it that way. And not that there's never validity to that, because that actually can be in sometimes a useful process. But what I found to be more interesting was to really not do so much looking unless something comes to me. Unless somebody comes and says, hey, that thing you were talking about, it reminds me of this, right? Or you should look at this or whatnot. And then it's like, that's different than finding something and then sitting with it. And then all of a sudden things start to happen that seem to match it. Right. So like when he said, you know, go look at the Gateway document, I went and I looked and I was flabbergasted. Right. And, so I, sat with it for a couple of days and tried to get my head around it and was just shocked, not only at, the how much it resembles things that I'm good at and experiences I've had in my life, but darn straight how even like many, many, many terms and codes that are used in that document are very, very meaningful to me in my own personal life and programming in a way that, you know, is pretty specific. And then after I sat with it for a couple of days, I realized there was a page missing. And so I went looking, and I looked, and I saw that, yes, the document was released with a page missing. So I went and found the document. Needless to say, I wasn't shocked about which page was left missing intentionally, right? And so I read them both, and then I sent them to you, and I said, I'd like to talk about this with you guys. And in a couple of weeks since I sent it to you, like, more and more things have happened or been uncovered, or I've found myself down holes that just keep me really circling around this. And I think it's important. And I know that maybe from what I've understood from looking at things the last couple of weeks, that there was some chatter in the alternative media a couple of years ago when these documents came out about this, but then it kind of went quiet for a bit. But it seems like it's ticked back up in the last few weeks, not just with myself and a little bit Michael Wan and a few others I've been with talking about it. But I saw even you guys had SMQ. I was there for a little bit the other day when you guys had SMQ AI on.
Yes.
And you guys were talking about it a little bit. So it seems like a timely topic. And so let's get it started. I just wanted to let everyone know why we're doing it this way. So we'll be discussing the gateway method or the gateway process documents, and then the missing page that goes along with it. So they will be in the description box. And I would recommend to people, if they want to have a further really good understanding of what it is we're talking about, maybe push pause right here and read the documents.
Yes, definitely read these, the documents, and then the supplemented piece with the missing page. Everyone should, that's in our circles, that listens to any of us, in my opinion, this is foundational stuff that it's going to do what it did for you, Emily. Everything's going to click in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, let's start with you, Nish, about like what is your I've obviously talked in the last few episodes we did about some of the experiences I've been having lately, and I've sort of, you know, looked at them through the lens of this document, and maybe we can get into some of that later, but I'd like to hear from each of you guys, like, what your sort of awareness of this, both the document and this process or method was, and then sort of how you see your sort of situation in light of it, right? So
actually, I'm going to pass that off to Michael for a minute, since I'm dealing with a poodle issue. So I'm listening, but I have to deal with her for a minute. Her nails caught in my clothing.
Michael, go ahead.
Okay, right on. So I actually have experience with the Gateway program back when I was just coming out of high school. I had like a year-long period where I was experimenting with it. Before that, I was in this yoga school called Amun Ra Yoga, which is like an Egyptian mystery school. And we performed a lot of similar techniques, and this was to like create out of body experiences and manifest your light body, or mentally create your light body, and then we did like a lot of meditation stuff. But the Amun Ra Yoga was really interesting, and it dovetailed into my experience with the Gateway program. And so for those that don't know, Robert Monroe is the one that created a process called HemiSync. And what HemiSync is, actually, most people will know it by the name of binaural beats. And yeah, binaural beats was created or at least patented in like 1880, 1890, something like that. But what it is you have a sine wave, a pure tone sine wave that you're playing in one ear, and then another pure tone sine wave you're playing in the other ear, and the difference between those will create a resonant frequency that your both hemispheres will hear. So, I mean, to show you guys how this works, or to explain how it works, I might need to explain a bit about brainwave frequency and patterning.
I think you should, Michael. I think you should lay it all out for everyone.
Okay. Will do. So we have, they've categorized about five brainwave frequencies, main ones, and that's in hertz, and that's cycles per second. And this is just a sine wave, so it's a frequency. So you have your gamma frequency, gamma wave. It's, I think, 35 and higher, 35 hertz, which is your highest frequency. And this is like an intense concentration. When your mind is in intense concentration, you exhibit these brain waves, really high frequency. Then beta is, you know, alert, active. It can be like anxiety based a little bit. So you're quite aware. And this is between 12 and 35 hertz. And then under that is alpha, which is like a relaxed state. It's kind of known as like the in-between state. You're kind of relaxed and you have like giving passive attention to what's around you and kind of in between what's inside and what's on the outside. And that's between 8 and 12 hertz. And then you have your theta. Now theta is when you're a little bit further into the sleep cycle and internal, like you're not totally asleep yet, but you're deeply relaxed and have inward attention. And this is between 4 and 8 hertz. And then you have your delta, which is like deep sleep. And this is between like 0.5 and 4 hertz. So deep sleep. So these, you can't hear these frequencies, right? If I played 4 for you, you wouldn't hear it. And maybe your brain would entrain to it eventually, but probably not. Like it doesn't really have an effect. From the studies that I've seen, it doesn't affect your brainwave frequency. So for your brain to hear these frequencies and entrain to them, you need to play frequencies that you can hear. And the difference between those frequencies creates that frequency. So say I want, say I want a deep sleep frequency. I want to entrain my brain to that. I'm going to play, say, 100 and just 100 hertz in one ear and 103 in the other. Now, the difference is 3 hertz. Now, that's in the delta area. So that 3 hertz difference, your brain will entrain to that 3 hertz. So now I will move into that frequency, a brainwave frequency. And some people can entrain a little bit easier. Some it takes longer, some you can't. But it's just a matter of like, you know, how easy is it for you to hypnotize yourself, this kind of thing. How easy to entrain with something around you or like harmonize with it. So what Monroe did, so he didn't create this idea or patent this, but what he did do was create hemisync, which is 2 pure tones in each ear, creating a deep sleep frequency and a wakeful frequency. So what he was trying to do is use both hemispheres of the brain equally. So your attentive and conscious mind and your dreaming mind together to explore parts of reality that you can't normally explore unless you're in deep sleep. And then usually you forget about it because you wake up, you know, and we all are active in these levels of consciousness, you know, below the wakeful state. So you just don't remember it. Well, some people do, you know, some people do have, astral travel has been around for a very long time. So this is the same thing. It's the same idea. This stuff has been around forever, but this technology is kind of a newer thing in the last 100 years. So this is now this is the start of the gateway process. This is the technology that's used for it. Now, there are ways to categorize this as well. The Institute uses focus levels, and I'll run through the focus levels really quick here, and then we can move on to the documents. So, also fun thing is the Monroe Institute was founded in 1974, which is kind of cool.
Another 74.
It's our 74, yeah. But, so focus level 1 is everyday waking consciousness, That is focus level one. Focus 10 is like deeply relaxed body and sometimes asleep body, if you can get that, and awake mind. So
I love at 10. This,
yeah, 10's great. At this state, when I'm in it, I experience like my hearing's like amazing. You have this awareness of what's around you, and your body's totally sleeping. So you can go to move your arms, and I've had many times where you move your arms and you feel them up, but you know that they're still sitting beside you. So you are kind of halfway. You're in between, and a lot of people experience a lot of fear at this state, and this is where like the hag comes in, and you know, the cat on your chest, that kind of thing. This feeling of fear of being out of body. So you know, that's the state where you, if you get over this fear, then you can sit in focus 10 and move from there.
A lot of people think they're dying when that happens. I know when it first happened to me, I thought, "Holy crap, I'm not alive anymore."
Absolutely. And I had a similar experience. A couple times I had the old hag on the chest kind of feeling, and then the crazy fear, like not knowing what's happening, am I dead, this kind of thing. So yeah, that's there. Give me a sec here. I've got allergies. Got to blow my nose.
I wanted to say also, so with the idea of this, all plays into my idea that this is the land of the dead where we are, and the deeper end. So rereading these documents really enforce this with the holographic stuff. So Michael, you look like you cleared your nose, but I wanted to throw that in. It is just furthering my ideas of what I think is going on rereading this.
Absolutely. And I'm in total agreement with you there. I know this is holographic, you know, all my experience tells me that we're in some kind of simulated reality.
Yes.
And it is for experience, and I believe to learn the cycles of being human. And I think there's a fixed amount of cycles that we learn here. They're games that we can learn to play. And once you learn it, you don't want to, this is kind of the wheel of fortune to me, or the wheel in the tarot.
Yes.
It's this cycle where you learn what it's like going up, and you learn what it's like being on the top, you learn what it's like going down, and you learn what it's like being on the bottom. And once you've done enough of that, and some people, they can't get enough of it, you know, but then you can move on. You know, you can go to another.
I could riff off of anything you're saying, but I'm being good.
Well, I appreciate it.
I can feel Emily too.
All right, I'll get through the focus levels here, and then we can start riffing on other stuff. But so we did 10. Focus level 11 is an access to a channel. They use that terminology. So allowing something in to channel through you. And that's focus 11. I don't really do that. I have never really done access channel like focus 11, but a lot of people think it's themselves at a different point in time. So that's, you know, that's a possibility. And Monroe always thought that the people that came to teach him and help him were future selves, future I theirs, he called them.
Yep.
So focus 12 would be your state of expanded consciousness. So this is like, you're in focus 10 still, but you're like so expanded that you are aware of many things around you. Like I said, that crazy hearing you can have in focus 10, this is kind of a focus 12. You have the expanded awareness of the physical reality you're in. And then focus 15 is into the state of no time. So this is where dimensionality comes into play. And you're no longer accessing physical, the physical portal of reality. So that's state 15 or focus 15. Focus 21 is your like edge of time space. So focus 15, you can still explore physical reality, but without time constraints. So visit yourself from the past, that those kinds of things. 21 is like edge of time space, and this is where you can explore other energy systems, entities, that kind of thing. And this is kind of gets into the astral dimensional levels. Now, because he was creating the Institute, part of it was created to, well, the later version was created to help people pass over and this kind of thing. So he added Focus 22 to kind of help people in comas or delirium or alcoholism or major drug addiction, stuff where you're like, you can contact them through the astral in that state. So you can contact people, living people. So, you know, they're not in total order, because as he developed them, he did that. So that's Focus 22, just helping people out of, you know, space and time, going, seeing them, helping them through those traumas, and where they're not really conscious, you know, their mind has gone and down a deep hole, and they sometimes need help to get out. And a lot of the times when he experienced helping certain people, and when other people help people in these states, they can realize it's a part of themselves, right? They feel like a part of themselves is coming home. So a lot of the times, all this is about the self in his work. But Focus 23 is for the recently deceased. So those who are like kind of stuck in between, unable to make sense of what's going on, just like Nish was saying, when she woke up in, you know, Focus 10, realizing she's out of body, not knowing. A lot of these people actually die and have no idea what to do. Some of them think they're still alive if it's like, you know, a quick death, gunshot, and they keep running. You know, they feel like they didn't die, so they're walking around. You know, it's the sixth sense all over again here.
This is a key fractal.
Hmm. Absolutely. So that's 23, and it's interesting that it's 23 for sure. The Focus 24 is so non-physical human intelligences that you're experiencing. Also, so it's not always non-physical, but 24, 25, and 26 is mostly non-physical, but they're religious, philosophical, belief system territories is what they're called. And these are the territories of like highly religious people that create this. They're sort of dimensions of reality where these beliefs have built up these spaces. So entering these spaces, you can find people stuck in belief systems where they're just looping around through these belief systems. Now, 26 is still the belief system. 27, Focus 27, would be the edge of human thought. And so he talks about these way stations that are like way stations for the soul, where people bring you, usually it's yourself that brings you, future self or a loved one kind of thing, brings you to these way stations where you figure out what you're doing next and next steps, that kind of thing. And part of what he was doing was teaching people to bring people to these way stations. One of them that he explained in his third book was a park. There was also one that was like a doctor's office, and it was for like doctors and professionals that wouldn't really, you know, wouldn't feel too comfortable anywhere else. Like if it's a doctor and they're in an office and then they're being told that, you know, they're moving on and this is just easier for them to understand. So it always, you kind of go where it's going to help you most. And there's these spaces that are created for that. So he would bring people to the park, and that was Focus 27. This is also Focus 27 is also where you can build mind palaces. And this has always been a thing for mystery schools, like places you can meet in non-physical reality and discuss and all that. So like, I'm sure Nish would know of some of these temples. Golden Dawn, I'm sure has one. There's most mystery schools will have them.
But then it was also associated with witch sabbats as well in the deeper aspect of it.
Mm. Right. Yeah, absolutely. So then after 27, these are all new to me, but, so 34, 35, this area of, the gathering. So this is, where you have people come witness changes that are taking place on Earth. He talks about, other intelligences, people kind of observing the progress. Could be, you know, like scientists running their lab experiment, that kind of feel.
Is it kind of like, in some ways, sort of like the observers from Fringe?
I don't know. I haven't seen Fringe, and I've been told to watch it so many times, so I may get.
You have to watch.
May do that. I know.
Yeah.
Eventually.
So pertinent. Yeah. Okay.
So then there's a Focus 42, which is the I there cluster consciousness. So when he talks about the I there,
we skip from 28 to 42.
Oh yeah. They don't go in. Yeah. No, it was 34, 35, and then 42. We've got 15, then 21, you know, it skips all over the place. I don't know his logic in this. Maybe there's hidden levels of focus, but
yes, you know, there's more there.
Like, I think it was sections 34. So I think some of those same sections are the ones that were missing from the original document, right? If we correlate sections to focus levels, which isn't exactly how it goes, but my mind does stuff like that. Like certain things are missing.
Yeah, yeah.
That those may also correlate to the missing focus levels, the hidden dimensions. Yeah.
I think a lot of it is, portions of mystery schools that have their dimensions in these certain focus levels.
Yes.
And you just don't talk about those because they're secret.
Well, you don't know until you know. That's also part of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 42 was the I there cluster consciousness. So that is the I there. That's all the U's out there where they converge and share their experiences and decide what to do and where to move forward. So you can think of this as like, you as yourself have a body that has, you know, your hands, say your hands are a different part of you that do different things. They have an idea of what they want to do, or you could see cells in the body or, you know, heart, something. If you animize that, and take an animistic view on the body, this is kind of describes the I there's. It's a bunch of you's that are out there that make up the whole you, but you're off having different experiences, and you have to stay separate to have those different experiences. And eventually, you come together, and the meeting places for the I there consciousness, where you become like this one group. That is Focus 42.
So would that be kind of like fractal selves? That would be sort of like the idea of fractal selves? Like,
yeah, sure. Like
spread out, each having different experiences, but part of the whole. And like when they come together, each has access to the part that the other fractal sort of.
Yeah, you could see it as like you're a fractured piece of a bigger whole self.
Okay.
So you take your pure white light and then you split that into the seven different colors through refraction. Now you have seven different entities that are experiencing seven different things and have seven different personalities. Now you split those, you know, and so this is kind of the idea. And moving backwards is getting back to the I theirs. It's getting back to the pure white light that encompasses all of those aspects. But you can come back with experience and gifts. And then focus 49 is your sea of I there clusters. So now we're talking, I picture this as like a Milky Way galaxy, right? Each arm of the galaxy is a bunch of I theirs. Now you have these big energy systems that are all kind of one, but they're all parts as well. And then there's many of them making up the, you know, Milky Way or whatever galaxy, the spiral galaxies. So that's going back into, you know, the system. So that is, those are the main focus levels. Now I'm going to shut up for a bit and listen to you guys.
Take it away, Ness.
I'm so glad you were able to lay that out. I think one of the great things in shows like this is that we can lay out the foundational stuff. So it's better than, yes, you should go read all the information, but at least we can move forward collectively. That involves the people that are going to be listening. And for me, so I got the HemiSync stuff from the Monroe Institute late. So it was probably like, I don't know, 2006 or seven. I mean, it was not that long ago. Even though that is, I guess, long in some ways, if there's space time, which they talk about. And so it helped define or give definition for experiences I naturally had my whole life. And I think, Emily, that's what you're discovering. And so it gave a language and a lattice to some of my inner workings. And I also then, like I tend to do, I rebelled against the whole system and the whole lattice work within the system. And now I admire it. I love the work of Monroe. And I have, at some point here along my journey, I felt like there was something else going on with the Monroe Institute. I know this is sacrilege because the Monroe Institute people are very, 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 very into it. And it's amazing, you know, we need tools, but I think that there is a few deeper layers going on here. And Michael actually alluded to some of them. And Emily, you plugged right into that. And so that's kind of what really interested me in this, I guess, scratching the surface and our little journey through the looking glass as they use in those documents. I love all of this, these trigger points, right? When you're reading through the Gateway documents that were released. So just in short, that's where I am with this, since we're going to build from the ground that Michael kind of laid that you brought with these documents. So,
all right. So then let's, since you guys have both kind of laid out your background with the Gateway process, now I will lay out mine, because I wasn't aware that I had one until recently, but apparently I have a fairly extensive one, right? So first of all, thank you for laying out the levels, Michael. The document only talks about up to level 21. Somebody who I know, Nish and I both know, I'm sure you know who she is. Michael, I don't know if you know her. I had a meeting with her the other day, and she informed me that levels existed up to 49. And she basically told me, pretty in different words, but with the same ideas behind it, exactly what you have said. And this is a person that not only did the Monroe process stuff, but also actually went to the Monroe Institute and has reported to me also the same thing you just said, Nish, and that at a certain point she felt something was going on with that. And so she didn't really go anymore, even though she still would play around with the stuff by herself, you know, but she kind of stepped away from that. And so, well, I didn't know that that they started this in 1974. That's pretty interesting, because I was born in 1975, right? And from the best that I can tell, like, I've been doing this my whole life, right? And so, like, okay, so I was listening to you guys with SMQAI the other day, right? And he was talking about, even though he, like, was religious about practicing these techniques for a couple of years, right? He got to a certain point and then he just, nothing, he couldn't, you know, he had some interesting experiences, but that was it. Like there was no further he could go with it, right? I'm understanding that correctly, right? I only got to hear.
Yeah, I wanted to dig into that with him.
Okay. So did you get to?
Yeah, we talked about it.
Okay. I just didn't know how. I just got to listen to about 40 minutes of your guys' interview and then I had to go. So I didn't get to hear the whole thing. But I think that part of the reason that this document was released, right, was because, like, I think that there's, like, whatever needed to be done with it was done. But essentially, there's people who naturally can do this, right? And then everyone else really kind of can't. They might have like the odd experience here or there, but like not the full-fledged kind of thing that is what sort of is being implied. I don't think that it's a possibility for everybody, right? You know, like, which is sort of what SMQ said, right? So I think that there's people who naturally have this tendency. And I think, and again, I tend to correlate things that are not, they're not saying this is what this is. But to me, when I read about them, it feels like, oh, this is what this is. I think the book that's referenced in the document called Stalking the Wild Pendulum by Bentoff, right? I think that the people who can do this naturally are the wild pendulums that they are stalking.
I totally agree with you there. And it's this really unfolds into a very big narrative.
Okay. And so, like, I think that basically, like, this whole thing that I have been going through since I arrived here in Austin, just almost, what is it, 3 months ago now? Like, it is, and actually, like, even largely the conversations I've been having with you guys around this has done a lot to, I don't want to say change my position, but instead I'll say expand my perspective and put me in a more neutral stance in terms of how I'm viewing the thing we used to refer to as what was done to us, right? Whereas now I'm going, all right, like they know there's these people who can do these things, right? And so they want them to do them, right? And so whether it be for nefarious purposes or just like, you know, like, I don't know if either of you guys, I used to coach gymnastics. I was a gymnast myself, but I coached gymnastics. And when I saw somebody that had talent, right, whether it was their burning desire to be a gymnast or not, my tendency was to want to approach them and coach them and nurture them and teach them how to use their talents, right? And so if you just sort of step back without going, oh, there was this horrible stuff done to us, and go, okay, well, what if we were literally just put into some kind of training program to cultivate these, you know, sort of, I don't know if they're genetic gifts or skills that they believe us to have, and probably shit went awry because that always goes awry, right? But, you know, and I'm sure that there was things that they thought, well, it wouldn't be so bad if we also took advantage of it for this or whatever. But the benefit was, is that, and how they rationalized it is this person will leave this programming with their skills intact, whether it's maybe not, maybe they won't be aware of that, but they'll, you know, like they'll have that skill honed and available to them if they should ever be able to discover it on their own. Right. Because they didn't leave us. They didn't like check us out of the project and say, all right, this is what you know how to do. And now you're on your own. Go use it how you want. Right. It's hidden from us. But obviously you and I and Michael, I'm not as familiar with what your background is. So it's sounding to me like this is just a study that you undertook at like a transformative period in your life. And you were moving from young adult to adult. Right. And it was meaningful. And it was something you sought out because you wanted to. Whereas Nish, I'm seeing for you, it was more like me. Right. So like we have all this stuff, but nobody really told us about it. We just went out into the world to try and fit in amongst people we might never fit in amongst, not even knowing why. Right. You know, and so I think that like this is what was going on under the ground there in Chatsworth and other places all around the country and the world. Right. I mean, there's a number of things going on, but I think a lot of the quote unquote training was this. Because by the time I was, say, 7 or 8, early 80s, about the time that this document was sent from the guy who was writing at the beginning of the document, right? So it is, let me just see here. So in June 1983, right? So this guy from the CIA or from the Department of Army, you know, was sending it to someone within the Department of Defense here, sending it for basically starting to distribute this technique throughout the intelligence agencies and the military groups, right? So he was going to... Mm-hmm. USAINSCOM, okay, which I looked up today, and it was kind of interesting what I found, right? So by 1983, I was already training in gymnastics, and, like, what was really weird is for, like, an eight-year-old, it's, like, pretty weird. Like, our gymnastics coach, and Danny Katz can corroborate this because it happened with her too, would leave workout in the middle of the workout, which doesn't make sense to stop physical activity in the middle and then go be quiet and lay down for periods of 30, 45 minutes and listen to what we were told were relaxation tapes. Right. And so, like, I think it was kind of, these were levels and skills already had been trained and attained before that age, but to put us into that spot, right. Kind of thing, to put us into that spot. So we would listen to these tapes, which I'm willing to go out on a very far limb and say, I'm probably pretty sure they were Hemisync tapes, right? From the Monroe Institute. And we would listen to these and then we would go back to our workout and whatever. But it seems like a funny thing to do with eight-year-old kids, right? I mean, by that point, you're not really working on, like, you know, focused concentration for competition at eight, right? So well,
that's the thing with stuff that, so you experienced that and that was your normal, and for the people that experience that, and then you find out later that that's not a normal practice, and that's how we get to have polarity with these experiences, and it is by talking to others that we're going through. I mean, you don't just in the middle of a workout, in the middle of physical exercise, just at that peak, at the apex, just stop and do that. It makes no damn sense physically.
It's weird, right?
Can I say something as well?
Yeah.
Just to add to that, well, the Monroe Institute was working with SRI as well, which is quite interesting.
Yep.
But, I mean, the question to me is, does anyone really choose it, you know? Or does it choose you in a lot of ways? Like you were saying, I just found interest in this, and absolutely I did. But does something draw that to you, right? If they have all these people that are able to do this kind of stuff, they might be looking for others that can do it as well, right? And draw them to the Institute, right? And just like this brings up the King book that I just read, The Institute, and I kind of mentioned it to you guys, but it's looking for these superpowers, these people with superpowers, and taking advantage of them. So, and this is called the Monroe Institute, right? You know, you have these ties that kind of draw each other together. But, you know, I think they think they're doing good deeds, like good things. I think they think, you know, most people think that they're doing something good for humanity's purpose. But when it's using someone else to achieve those things, I don't know, it's a bit of a iffy thing, but I think you always have a choice. And I know I just feel powerful in myself enough, and I know you both do as well. Someone tries to use me for something, I usually tell them to piss off. You know, I'm the master of my body and my mind.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point, right? And I know, like, for example, the person who I was talking about these documents with, like, she thinks she had the experiences when she was a kid, and then she was attracted as an adult as well. So that attraction may come from some deep memory from childhood, from some pre-life memory or other life memory or whatever, or just that's your natural interest because that's your natural talent. So I think that's an important point you make. My point is that this was never something I tried to do. Like, I never was like, I'm going to lay down and practice concentrating. Like, if you ask anyone who knows me, trying to get me to sit down and concentrate on anything is a waste of time, right? Like, I'm either into something, it's not something I work at or don't work at. It's just not, right? Like, it's not how I do it, right? But that being said, I found myself like all of these experiences, which they describe, are experiences that I have had, and they have come through a few different. So aside from childhood, right? Because, you know, unless we're Nish, we don't have perfect memories of all the things at very young babyhood. Right. And I don't know that I'm not the talented lucid dreamer that she is. I'm not the disciplined enough recaller of the talented lucid dreams, because I do think I do have some wild stuff sometimes, but I have not protected, sort of perfected, or even really with concentration focused on like learning how to sort of hang on to it to understand it. But the main ways that these experiences have come to me, there's a couple. So a later one is I found myself in need of therapy for PTSD. And I was sent to someone who specialized in EMDR, which is sort of similar to this. Are either of you guys familiar with EMDR?
No. What is it?
Yeah, please tell us. I think I've heard Kristen Lang talk about it.
Yeah, she and I have talked about that, okay? So it stands for Eye Movement Desensitization Reprocessing. And what it is, it's a kind of therapy that they use for trauma, and you can use it post-trauma with PTSD, but it's actually even most effective if you use it immediately at the site of trauma. The therapist that I was sent to, like, she would go over and train soldiers in the Middle East and stuff like that to be able to do it. If they had like their one of the people from their team lose a leg or something out in the field, they could do it to them right there while they were waiting for help to come. And it like made it so that they would not experience the level of PTSD that they might otherwise. Right. So it's a technique that can be applied post or like right at the trauma point. Right. And so the way it worked for me is, basically, I'd had a bunch of traumatic experiences in my life that had been sort of like everything started to unravel when I had my dog got attacked by a German Shepherd and he bit my dog's leg off. Right. And it was like really traumatic for me. And it started to unravel all these other traumas I had in the past. And so basically, and then while I was seeing her, I had another trauma happen. So we worked on these two things specifically, but once you kind of got it with one or two of them, it sort of worked all the other ones, past and future as well, is you will basically go over and over the story in your head of what happened. Right. But while you're doing it there, I would have these things in my hand, these little things that vibrated. And it would vibrate the right one and then left, right, left, right, left. So it would start syncing the right and the left, right, right, left motion with the brain to get both sides of the brain online at the same time to replicate the conditions of REM sleep, which is the best conditions under which to resolve issues that you're having a hard time resolving in your waking hours, because both sides of your brain are online, right? It's very rare that both sides of the brain are online during your waking hours. There are a few ways to get to it, but that's right. Like, it's generally in REM sleep. So we go through the story over and over while this stuff was right, left buzzing in my hand, to the point where like talking about it stopped becoming agitating. I would get less and less upset each time we went through it. And then you get to the place where you're not upset anymore at all. And then you can actually start to like rewrite the story. And quite literally, like, it would get to where even the vision of the experience in my head would change. Like, it was like I had edited the tape, right? And you can start to replace with what happened with like what would have been a preferable outcome, right? And sort of like really just like re-edit the experience. And it's quite fantastic. And after having completed that, and it was weird. Like, once I saw her for a couple months, and then like I didn't have anxiety or trauma anymore. It was like I still had problems, but not that, right? So it worked really well. And one of the things that was recommended to me when it was complete was that I to make sure that I always did a lot of like right left motion, like walking, because if you walk or run or ride a bike, anything that's right left motion for like more than 30 minutes, you'll get into that like a sort of light version of that state. And then the longer you stay there, sort of the deeper the work you can do there is, which is part of why I'm so insistent on lengthy exercise. And I do a lot of walking and running because it replicates those conditions. And once you're like not trying to manage your problems or your issues anymore, for me, it's also led to like, that's where I start to connect with my I there self or whatever, my I there selves. And that's where I get a lot of my interesting ideas and different perspectives, and, or I call them like downloads of information from, I don't know where, but like, you know, good stuff. Right. So that, but then the other thing for me is like, I really like to dance. Right. And I like techno music, and that music and that movement that I do, because I'll go to a party and I'll dance for 2, 4, 6, 8. I've danced as much as like 20 straight hours at parties before, right? And especially if you're in a room with a good sound system, I think that replicates some of the same conditions as the hemi-sync tapes, right? And so then it's just a question. Now, I look around and I'm 100% sure that most of the people at the party are not having the same experience that I'm having. Now, whether that be because they're just like, they're focused on something else, or because they don't have the whatever this potential is for this that I may have naturally. I've had the most insane, crazy, out there experiences of my life in those conditions. Now, sometimes location seems to be involved with it as well, but not necessarily always, right? And so I guess that I was attracted naturally to experiences that would allow me to access those levels maybe that were sort of still stored inside of myself that I had achieved at some point. You know, and when I saw this document, I mean, there was nothing in here that like, I was like, no, I've never experienced that. This is stuff that like, I have countless experiences at it. And I was kind of, it's always surprising. Like sometimes you'll find like a thing here or a thing there, but like when you find a document that pretty much explains like the experiences that you've been having all your life, right, and sort of where it comes from, it's like, okay, like this is fascinating. And then also like, what's the rub, right? And here there's like, you know, okay, they stop at 21. I'm sure that's intentional, right? And then the pages that are missing, okay, sort of that's intentional. But then also this sort of idea that it just like anyone can learn it, right? Kind of out there is why, you know, in my head, the reason that they would release this whenever they did is kind of their use for it was either done, or the way that they're using this now is so much, unless you are good at like comparative analysis in the way maybe the three of us are, you wouldn't recognize that something most people consider a daily normal like activity or part of their life is actually sort of the new game board for this experience. Right. And so nobody would recognize it. And so it's okay to put this out there and let people think that it's kind of over or it had run its course or whatever it is. Right. Kind of like when you know, let the MK Ultra documents out in 1974 in the church committee or whatever. People are like, oh, it wrapped then, right? Just because it had transformed in the way it was being used so drastically that nobody would ever recognize what it was now based on the information that had been let out.
Well, and all this ties right into a lot of those, that particular stuff with MK Ultra, the Theta, Alpha, Gamma. I mean, those are all programs within MK Ultra. So
yes.
I think a lot of people don't realize that there's a direct association there.
Yeah. And there are also things that are celebrated as part of our pop culture now, with cryptocurrencies named after them, with them being styles of music, or, you know, like, or even like the way binaural beats have been like, people are like, oh yeah, man, I download the app on the phone to help myself sleep better or whatever, right? Like not recognizing the wide open space that's being, that could lead you to. And there's nothing wrong with that as long as you know that that's what you're doing.
Well, yeah, this is kind of the thing too. You know, a lot of parents were told, oh, you want to make your kids smarter? Hey, there's this thing, it's called, you know, Baby Einstein. Do you remember that?
Yes. Oh my God.
Oh my God. I watched some of that and I'm like, my brain is turning to mush. Like how are you letting a child watch this? I don't know. But that's just visual and audio. But I mean, there's a lot of these things. I know my friend's parents put like the sounds of waves. How do you know that there's not some binaural beats in that too? You know, the sounds of the forest, all these tapes trying to relax children, put them to sleep. Kind of, you know, they probably work because they're brain entrainment.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. I mean, plus SRI and a lot of these guys are using this technology in soundscapes. I know I've been in so many situations where I'm out dancing and to raves and, you know, big parties. One of them called Shambhala here in Canada. And I know there's like entrainment going on. I can feel it. And it's really strange when a lot of people start entraining together. So, yeah, I know there's something happening there, and it's on a much greater level. And it's not just, you know, I think in a lot of ways, the Monroe Institute was trying to help people and do a good thing, but, you know, they're working with other people that are doing so many other things, you know, like, and where are they getting their funding and all that kind of stuff. So
when you start bringing in the military, that's when I'm like, mm-hmm. You know,
oh, yeah.
When the good stuff starts being filtered through those agencies, this is where we are. This is what it's, you know, this is why good things become nefarious.
Also, I like your story about that, like converting those memories, because it reminds me a lot of like, well, first Scientology's auditing process. Where they're holding, I don't remember what the things are called, but they hold these things.
The rot, the stone or metal.
Yeah, that kind of measure their.
Yes.
I'm guessing they're.
Yes.
Pardon me?
E-meter.
E-meter, yes, yeah. Right. So the auditing process with the E-meter, and it's supposed to, they're supposed to re-experience traumatic times in their life or experiences until there is no emotion left there. And it's kind of like neutralizing those experiences, and then you can kind of move on from them. And in the gateway process, there's something called the energy conversion box that at the start of each focus level you go to, and you put fears and anxieties in this box. Now, this is also interesting to me because of this is a King reference as well, or King references it in The Shining and in Dr. Sleep. Danny puts the demons in these boxes and closes them all up in these boxes at the hotel, which is, you know, from The Shining. So that's really interesting to me, but you open the box and you're supposed to open the box and then convert that energy, take that experience, take out the emotion and reintegrate that energy. So it is very similar and it's interesting. And I do wonder about that, you know, and I've done that naturally throughout my life, you know, thinking about things I'm afraid of, and I really like to put myself in situations that I fear to get over those fears. So in a way that's doing it for me, but I think, yes, some people it would really help them to be able to set those aside and then work on them, you know, later or at a time that suits them better.
Yeah. When you were talking about the entrainment at dance festival, like that you've experienced, right? Mm. So I think one of the things that's been interesting for me is I remember when this started happening to me, right? And I think I told you guys about it. Like the first really interesting experience I had with dance music where it seemed like I was connecting to another place or another time or some future version of myself was here in Austin. It was in like that 1999 into 2000 time, like late 1999, early 2000, right? And then it increased over the years, right? And then at a certain point, like I'd say about sometime around 2007 or something like that, maybe 2006, 2007, it went to another level when I began closing my eyes when I danced. Right. And sort of like going into like bringing like my own inner visions into the process. Right. And when you were talking about how like you weren't you weren't willing, you didn't like, you didn't want to be used, right? Like if you're that kind of thing, right? Like, it's been interesting, the experiences, you know, for whatever may have happened when we were kids, whether it was just training or whether there was use beyond our consent or whether we consented in some way that we just haven't sorted back out yet because we're not understanding the flow of time. Like, if this was the decision made in the future to go back and have this experience to repair something, to reignite something, to reclaim something, whatever it is, I don't know how it works, then that's certainly possible. But you know, when I started having these experiences on the dance floor and starting to feel like these parties I were going to were some sort of like underground laboratory, right? And was I being used? I went through some of that. And at a certain point, what I started to realize was it was really more that I was being observed, right? And that it was really more like, it felt like there was other people there, like one or two people there that seemed to be aware of the experience that I was having. And I don't mean like, oh, like there was someone like you or Nish there that was aware of it because they were having it too. Although I have bumped into a few people like that over the course of my time in the underground spaces, where it's like, you know that there's this other person in the room that is kind of having, is it on the same level as you, or having, you know, when I say on the same level, I don't mean like a superiority level, but just like they're tapping into the same thing you are.
Yes.
Right. I've had that experience a few times, and it's always really cool when you do, or generally it's cool. Every once in a while, it's an asshole who's having that experience or whatever. But there seems to be sometimes people, and often they were often people who were somehow involved with like the behind the scenes stuff at the party, like the visuals or the sound, right? Who seemed aware of this experience I was having and intent on sort of observing me as I moved around in it, right? No one ever did anything. No one ever, you know, like every once in a while, it felt like there was somebody who was trying to like provoke it to a certain extent or distract from it or whatnot. But it mostly seemed like there was curiosity in watching a person who was aware of the experience they were having have it, and kind of, you know, what would that do to their experience, the awareness that they're also being observed.
Can I speak to that a little?
Yeah, please.
I know what you're feeling and I know what you're explaining because I've felt it before. And I guess there's I've been to a couple different festivals and they're all a little bit different and the vibe is different. And I really feel like certain music, certain artists are creating a sound portal and using the energy of the people in the crowd to open gates. And now sometimes they're great. Like, you know, you just flow with it. You're the one like cycling open this thing. And that's a great feeling. And I do think there's eyes on you. And when it feels right, it feels right. There's times where I've been in the middle of something and being like, no, I don't want this gate opened, you know? Yeah. There, and you kind of see through it. And, actually, when it changed at this festival I used to go to quite frequently is when big production companies got a hold of this and started sending their artists there. And it was a totally different vibe, totally different feel. And it was just, no, I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't jive with that energy. I couldn't turn that wheel and open that gate. And that's kind of what it felt like.
So what, like, I know exactly what you're talking about. There's many ways you can have the experience, right? And sometimes it's like what you're talking about. Like there is an artist, or sometimes it's not even the artist. Sometimes it's the guy doing the sound, right?
Who's exactly.
Yes.
And they're creating the portal for the energy reason you're talking about. Then there's the other experience sometimes, and this is probably my favorite, when you just have like a DJ who's incredibly gifted and skilled and artistic, and he likes to play around with his own mind. So he's doing stuff with the music that is probably way over most people in the room's head, right? But there's one or two people out there in the audience that are sort of like in that space with him, and there's a back and forth between the two of you, and it is beyond the coercion of somebody else trying to control him or you or whatever. And that shit can be really cool, right? But I know
and I think that's a portal too. Yeah, absolutely. Right. I think you're creating like a mind sync, mind link, and pulling forth some kind of energy from that.
Yeah, there's this DJ that I particularly love that is from England, but plays quite frequently in Southern California, or at least, you know, did in the underground scene that I was a part of. And he was very expert at like understanding the geometry of the room and like throwing sound around in a way that like created this sort of, I don't know, like geometric space for you to move around in a different way than I experienced most other DJs. Right. And like, sometimes I would just look at him and I could tell that he sort of knew that I knew what he was doing, even though most people were just like, oh, this music is badass. And they didn't really quite understand why. And I remember posting something either on his page or on the event page after, thanking him for the endless dimensional travels through space, time and sound. Right. And he really liked that. Like he, you know what I mean? He was like, it almost seemed like, thank you, someone gets it. Right. Kind of thing. Like I had sort of been on a spaceship with him for the, you know, for the evening or whatnot. It is very different. I don't go to many festivals, although I've been to some with, you know, a variety of experiences. I go to pretty small things that are just in like dark, dank rooms and the pits of Los Angeles. But I do know, especially on like those circuits of festivals that are sort of loosely connected or related to Burning Man, there's a lot of intelligence agency, whether they be government intelligence agency or private intelligence agency, involvement with the sound, lighting, production, stage crew kinds of companies.
Yes.
And there's even been
advertising, all that.
A lot of artists caught up in it, and you'll like the one that's like there's several, right? But I'm just going to focus in on one because of the way it sort of is obvious. There's this artist named Bass Nectar, right? Who has been really brought down. He's like huge on that sort of circuit, right? He plays music that is like really just super bass heavy and sort of distorted sounds and whatnot. But literally his logo is like, I can show you you guys are like, let me pull it up here. I'm going to show you the Bass Nectar logo. And so this is his logo, right? But this, you know, the stories that I hear behind the scenes, right, are basically that this is a guy who had either from his own, just it's naturally who he is, or he kind of got pushed this way, inappropriate sexual behavior, right? And you know, they brownstoned him and basically got him to go around pushing a style and a sound of music that was able to very easily be used for what you are talking about, right? Opening portals both symbolically on the screen with his visuals and with the sound, you know, and just ushering the audience right through. Right. And, you know, and there's basically, if you look at his logo,
the logo with the B on both sides lays it out right there where you've got it on each side. And then his B is in the middle. That's the brain there. It's right there. It's literally like everything you need to know on that second row right down.
Hemi-sync kind of stuff. Absolutely. And then if you look at, this book, hold on.
But not only that, it also plays into
there's a book called The Laws of Mental Domination, and that's basically what they use as sort of the inspiration for all of this.
Oh yeah, it's right there. Mm-hmm. But when you double it like he does with his logo with the B in the middle, you're also looking at this interdimensionality of
the mirror.
Right, but in like say the idea of possession and all that, they use that model. This model's used in the occult forever, and it's literally like, I'm just surprised he's so bold with that logo. It's very interesting. I love it. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's even this stuff like this one. He uses this one a lot on screen, right, with the eye.
Yeah,
you know, and his visuals are incredibly. They flash a lot. Like it would be the kind of thing that if you had epilepsy, you probably shouldn't watch his visual show.
Right? Is that him with the long hair?
Yeah.
Oh, child. Pardon me. I was getting so hot in here.
And he's gotten more and more strange looking over the years, though, as like he's become more and more distorted.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so this is the thing about this is an ancient sacred ability that has been massively compromised and abused. Right. Like when I was describing the experiences I've had over the years with various DJs or other dancers on the dance floor, like that's amazing. Like that's, you know, finding someone to play the glass bead game with, right? Like that's something that is sort of like our birthright by being here. And the way it's been sort of co-opted, whether it be through technology on a certain level or just through like, you know, a decadent, debaucherous culture in the complete wrong way, right? It's gross. But the actual thing itself isn't necessarily bad. It's an ancient, sacred, you know, sort of circumstance, right? The ability to sort of get into that with another conscious aware being of your choice.
Absolutely. And I'm a dancer, so I love dancing too. And I've done some of the big festivals, but I've also just doing clubs long ago and far away, like in the 80s in San Francisco, and then just all over my travels, working all the clubs in Chicago in the 90s, different shows, mostly live music. Everything I worked was live music. But I have noticed several times during my tenure into all that, those moments, those particular people playing that were bringing in some sort of auditory manipulation to create this effect. So a couple clubs I worked at where I was a bartender, and this is going on. So I'm actually not drinking. I'm not on anything because I'm working, and I actually have always just honored that when I work. And so there's at least three times I can think of off the top of my head where I was all of a sudden felt like I was plucked out of my body. Like I was in this different, you both know what I'm talking about. It's kind of something you have to experience. And this was all from the music. And of course, probably the stuff on the screen, you know, the stuff they're flashing and everything. Yep. And I've got to say, I loved it every time. And the three times I can think of right now, none of those particulars within those scenes had anything that felt nefarious to me. Mm-hmm. It all felt very transcendental.
Yeah. I've had both, and I've had things that are mixtures, right? Things where it's like, okay, this is like kind of weird because this feels like there's nothing nefarious going on, but I see a nefarious fucker in the corner over there watching it go on, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Once you're tapped in, yeah, there's, I mean, I feel like I have more nefarious stories than not, so I like to I like to highlight the really great ones.
Yeah, you know, and even like, but like, I think a lot of times also we've been scared away from the experiences for the concern of the nefarious thing, right? And I actually think like that's one of the things I'm very intent right now on backing away from. Like, obviously, we've all done tons of research and had all these experiences, and we are aware that that is out there, right? But this sort of like fear or this sort of like idea that the most important thing is to avoid the nefarious stuff, like, keeps us from almost everything, right?
Oh yeah. And yeah,
like at this point now it's just like no, like, you know, think about like how bullies scare, you know, did you ever see the movie, it was like, oh god, there was this little dog, what was his name, Bolt, did you ever see the movie Bolt? It's like a little movie about a dog, it was really good, right? Like it was about a dog and his person. Right. It was a hero's journey story. I saw it with my cousin. Right. Like a little, it's like a sort of a kid's movie. But in the movie, there was this cat that was like, you know, sort of a villain. Right.
Always.
That would like stalk the alleys and be evil and scare everyone away and whatever. And the truth was the cat had no claws. She had been declawed. Right. And so she was scared. And so she had to try and intimidate everybody with legends about her claws or whatever, that they would pop out and, or whatever it was. However she scared people, it was this overcompensation for an inadequacy.
Yeah, classic.
There's so much of that out there. I think so many of the people that, like, Nish, even you and I at times, and Michael, I don't know you well enough, but I assume you as well, have been sort of coaxed into being afraid of, right?
Oh, like, yeah. There have been moments.
Needlessly, yeah. Right? Like, whether these be people or whether these be, like, technologies or things that are out there.
And I scare myself. I think that's the, no one scares me. I'm just like, I get myself in this crazy corner and I'm like, holy shit. You know, and then I wonder if it's myself that is doing all the crazy shit. So that scares me.
Isn't that the weird one when you're like, is my consciousness piloting the chemtrail program? Right.
Right.
Anyone else here had that one? So I want to, let's move to the patron segment in just a second, where I kind of want to get into, like, maybe some different perceptions of this document and ways that this process may be being used that are a little less obvious, but in some ways, like, should be captain obvious, if you guys are amenable to that. But before we do that, I just wanted to go back to one thing you said earlier. Just, we got away from it, but I wanted to go back to it. When you were describing Focus 22, Michael, and you were talking about how, like, this is often the area, like, where people with, like, drug addiction and things like that, right? Like, things like that, that the people, when they would go into Focus 22, they would connect mm-hmm. to people who are sort of suffering and sort of lost themselves. Am I understanding what you said correctly?
Yeah.
Okay. So last weekend we were over at Robert's house, right? Robert Phoenix. I know you just did a show with him, Nish. He shared this story about having tried Iboga or Ibogaine once, right? And what he said, like, he wasn't a heroin addict or anything like that. It's just he had always thought that he would like to try it. And then all of a sudden somebody showed up with it. So it's like, all right, well, I said I want to try it, so I've got to do it, right? And what he described about 20 or 30 minutes in or whatever was, it literally felt like somebody else came into him, right? And was, like, looking through his eyes. Right? Like, somebody else had literally come in and was looking through his eyes. Right? And he said it was the strangest thing. And that he said that the guy who a couple of years later, he talked to someone who was, like, some kind of shaman or a person who conducts these healings with people who are oftentimes drug addicts and stuff like that. And he says this, what Robert was describing, is pretty common. So I'm wondering if the thing you describe, a person practicing the Focus 22 level, they're going out there and are they, their consciousness is coming into a person who is in that drug addicted phase, and they may have taken Iboga to sort of try and, you know, bring this experience about to sort of reshuffle the deck or rewire their brains. But I'm super curious if maybe that is a Focus 22 connection. People out there having the Iboga experience for the, you know, because they're suffering from the things you're talking about, that this becomes the portal that Focus 22 sort of goes through and like sort of the destination point. Or one.
I think you're onto something. Absolutely. And I have my own experience, on DMT that I'll talk about behind the curtain. But
all right. So then let's leap over into the other side of said curtain. But before we do, Michael, tell people where they can find you.
Look up my name. If you find me, good. If not,
that's a man after my own heart. I love that.
Cool. And Nish?
I wanted to make one point before I do that, is that for me, everything's coming from my point and my point, my perspective, right? My single point here. And when I say nefarious, I'm talking about anything that is not friendly towards my enterprise. And so that's usually where, what I'm talking about. Sometimes people get lost in the idea of nefarious and where.
Oh, yeah.
So you may find me on Patreon/Nish with two eyes, and Instagram, Nish2Eyes369, and Twitter, I have on lockdown, but you may friend request me, Nish13. So, and then on Wednesdays, I'm on the Obelisk with Jerry Cthulhu.
And to what you just said, Nish, like that's kind of what I'm talking about, right? Like so many things that people think of as nefarious, like are something that have never actually touched them.
Yes.
Right? I know people who spend 25 hours a day, like, you know, like
in paranoid.
Well, being paranoid, but like life revolves around trying to prevent there from being, like they're talking about the tyranny that the COVID restrictions have placed on them and that they're afraid of having, that they'll have to have a vaccine passport or something, right?
Yeah.
And I think most of those people have never even come face to face with that.
Well, and it's in the end, and this is why this document's so important when we start talking about holographic realities that it talks about in that first half, is so important because we need to understand that we are actually creating this, the dramas we see. So psychologically, we understand this, but also there's more to it. Psychology just has brought it into, I think, the collective mind, and people get stuck there. You have to take this idea down deeper. And I love that the document actually goes in and puts the Einstein stuff on the shelf a little bit, because I'm more in the etheric Tesla area.
Yeah.
And I like that they actually make a point to not disrespect him, but have to go, well, we go deeper than this, his theory. So again, that's a teaser for the next hour, but I agree. It's perception and it's how we're projecting our realities into the holographic.
There's really not very many circumstances where there's anyone out there stopping us from doing what we want them, what we want to do. We stop ourselves because we're fearful that someone is going to try to stop us, but 99 out of 100 times, nobody ever tries to interfere with you when you're trying to do what you're trying to do, unless you're like trying to get over so you don't miss your exit on the fucking freeway.
Oh, absolutely. Right? And then those people that create the dramas. And so here's the difference for me is there's the point of observation where you can say, yes, these people, like we were talking about earlier with how crazy Canada is getting with some of these bills, it's the point of perception. So this is created and you have to make the decision whether or not you're going to participate in it. And the problem with it, like we saw so wonderfully done in the Matrix movie, is that it's kind of like a collective hive, right? The woman in red scene.
I've only ever slept through the Matrix. I've never been able to make it through. Last time we tried to watch it, I think would I fall asleep about 56 times.
Oh, that's the it's the program, but it is worth getting through, Emily. It really is, because it's iconic, but it also tapped in whoever wrote it, because we know Sophia has come up and said she has, there's all that, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's an important movie just for some of these concepts because it gives people visuals.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to move over. You guys can get the other half of this over on Nish's Patreon or on mine, patreon.com/offplanetmedia or at emilymoyer.locals.com. And you can also find me at emilycmoyer.com. We will see you on the other side.
Bye, bye, bye.
All right.
And there they go, Michael Wachter and Emily Moyer. I would like to thank the producers of this program, Christy Tesmer, Jason Lamson, Marcy Shapiro, Marin Kramer, Melanie Poe, Michael Wachter, Santa Rebecca, as well as Patrick Newland. And all the other patrons through my Patreon. Thank you.